चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जयाद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद जय जय श्री चैतन्य जय नित्यानंद जयाद्वैत चंद्र जय गौर भक्त वृंद श्री श्री राधा गोपीनाथ की जय। So today we are reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila chapter 20 called The Lord Instructs Sanatan Goswami. We'll start with verse 253 and then move up to verse number 262. Okay, these 10 verses are all closely related on a single topic here, so, and none of them have purports. Well, they do, but they're one-line purports. So I'll read the first 9 first on my own, and then we'll come to this one here. Ichha shakti pradhan Krishna ichhai sarvakarta Jnana shakti pradhan Vasudeva adhishthata. The predominator of the willing potency is Lord Krishna. For by his supreme will, everything comes into existence. In willing, there is a need for knowledge, and that knowledge is expressed through Vasudev. Ichha jnana kriya vina na hoy srijan, tiner tino shakti meli prapancha rachan. There's no possibility of creation without thinking, feeling, willing, knowledge, and activity. The combination of the supreme will, knowledge, and action brings about the cosmic manifestation. Kriya Shakti Pradhan Sankarshana Balaram Prakrita Prakrita Srishti Karena Nirman. Lord Sankarshan is Lord Balaram. Being the predominator of the creative energy, he creates both the material and spiritual worlds. Ahankarera Dhishthata Krishnera Ichchai Goloka Vaikuntha Srije Chitshakti Dwarai. That original Sankarshan, Lord Balaram, is the cause of both the material and spiritual creation. He is the predominating deity of egotism, and by the will of Krishna and the power of the spiritual energy, he creates the spiritual world, which consists of the planet Goloka Vrindavan and the Vaikuntha planets. Jajapi asrijya nitya chitshakti vilas tathapi sankarshana ichchai tahara prakash. Although there is no question of creation as far as the spiritual world is concerned, the spiritual world is nonetheless manifest by the supreme will of Sankarshan. The spiritual world is the abode of the pastimes of the eternal spiritual energy. Sahasrapatram kamalam gokulakhyam mahatpadam tatkarnikaram taddhama tadanantangsha sambhavam. Gokula, the supreme abode and planet, appears like a lotus flower that has 1,000 petals. The whirl of that lotus is the abode of the Supreme Lord, Krishna. This lotus-shaped supreme abode is created by the will of Lord Ananta. This is from Brahma Samhita. Maya dvare srijete ho brahmandera gan jada rupa prakriti nahe brahmand karan. By the agency of the material energy, this same Lord Sankarshana creates all the universes. The dull material energy, known in modern language as nature, is not the cause of the material universe. Jada hoite srishti nahe ishar shakti vine tahate sankarshana kare shakti radhane. Without the Supreme Personality of Godhead's energy, dull matter cannot create the cosmic manifestation. Its power does not arise from the material energy itself, but is endowed by Sankarshana. Ishwarera shaktiye srishti karaye prakriti lauhajena agni shaktiye paye daha shakti. Dull matter alone cannot create anything. The material energy produces the creation by the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Iron itself has no power to burn, but when iron is placed in the fire, it is empowered to burn. And now the verse we have on the board. Please repeat. Etau. Etau. hi vishvasya cha bijayoni ramo mukunda purusha pradhanam anviya bhuteshu vilakshanasya jnanasya cheshata imau puranau etau hi vishvasya cha bijayoni ramo mukunda purusha pradhanam anviya bhuteshu vilakshanasya jnanasya cheshata imau puranau etau hi vishvasya cha bijayoni ramo mukunda purusha pradhanam anviya bhuteshu vilakshanasya jnanasya cheshata imau puranau. Etau hi vishvasya cha bijayoni ramo mukunda purusha pradhanam anviya bhuteshu vilakshanasya jnanasya cheshasta imau purano. Etau hi vishvasya cha bijayonim ramo mukunda purusha pradhanam anviya bhuteshu vilakshanasya jnanasya cheshata imau puranau. Etau hi vishvasya cha bijayoni ramo mukunda purusha pradhanam anviya bhuteshu vilakshanasya jnanasya cheshata imau puranau.
Matajis.
Etau hi vishvasya cha bijayoni ramo mukunda purusha pradhana anviya bhuteshu vilakshanasya jnanasya cheshata imau purano. Etau hi vishvasya cha bijayoni ramo mukunda purusha pradhanam anviya bhuteshu vilakshanasya jnanasya cheshata imau puranau. Etau hi vishvasya cha bijayoni ramo mukunda purusha pradhanam anviya bhuteshu vilakshanasya jnanasya cheshata imau purano. Etau,
these two, namely Rama and Krishna,
he, certainly, vishvasya,
of the universe,
cha,
and
bijayoni,
both the cause and ingredient,
Rama,
Balarama, Mukunda,
Krishna,
Purusha,
the original Mahavishnu,
Pradhanam,
material energy,
Anviya,
after entering,
Bhuteshu,
into the material elements,
Vilakshanasya,
of varieties of manifestation,
Jnanasya,
of knowledge,
Cha,
also,
Ishate,
are the controlling power,
Imo,
both of them,
Purano,
are the original cause.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Isi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Jai.
Balaram and Krishna are the original efficient and material causes of the material world. As Mahavishnu and the material energy, they enter into the material elements and create the diversities by multi-energies. Thus they are the cause of all causes. Please repeat.
Balaram and Krishna
are the original, efficient, and material causes of the material world. As Mahavishnu and the material energy, they enter into the material elements and create the diversities by material energies. Thus they are the cause of all causes.
Purport. This verse is quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam 10:46-31. Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shlaka Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha.
So, in Chaitanya Charitamrita, we have a very detailed description of creation. And sometimes reading this description of creation, one might wonder, I do sometimes, as to why so much detail is given about different forms predominating, different elements participating in different aspects of the creation. So there's Krishna, and then Balaram, and then the Chaturvyuha, and then a second Chaturvyuha, and then Mahavishnu, and each member of the Chaturvyuha is in charge of ego or intelligence or mind. And from one person comes this, and from another person comes that. Why? Why so much detail? And half of it, of course, we cannot remember or we cannot understand. And here in these verses, we get some hint as to why the scriptures, also Srimad Bhagavatam, like third canto, for example, why the scriptures spend so much time and energy discussing matters of creation in so much detail. And a couple different reasons are given in the verses that we've read. One reason, sort of a very fundamental but very important reason, is something that's been said now, I think, in four of these verses we read. Namely, that material nature or matter cannot itself be the cause of everything we see. This is sort of a fundamental tenet of any theism, any theistic philosophy, that matter itself cannot come into existence on its own. It cannot transform itself to produce everything that there is, despite what certain types of scientists may tell us today, despite what popular culture may say. Matter cannot on its own explode into life, into existence. That's sort of a basic principle. In fact, the Vedanta Sutra, it begins with this point very early on. The very first sutra, Vedanta Sutra, is famous, right? Athato Brahma Jignasa. Now, therefore, let us inquire into Brahman, the absolute truth, into the ultimate reality. What is that absolute truth? The next line gives the definition. Janmadyasya yataha. That from which everything is born, in which it exists, and into which it enters at the end. Okay? Janma Adi. And then just a couple lines later, a negative statement is made. Ikshateer na shabdam. This material universe could not have been caused by matter itself. Ikshatehe. Why? Because there's a conscious being. Consciousness is required. Some form of life is required behind it. Matter itself cannot be its own cause. Prakriti, or material nature, cannot be the cause of everything we see. And so you find in the Upanishads, for example, one of the most important statements that's made, the most famous statements, comes in Chandogya Upanishad, where it says, Sad eva somyam idam agra asit. In the beginning, there was only Sat. There was only that which is existent. Brahman, reality, God. It was the only thing that was present. Aham eva asam eva agre, Lord Vishnu says in Srimad Bhagavatam. In the beginning, only I was there, nothing else. But then what happened? Tad aikshata. He thought. Bahu syam prajayeya. Let me become many. Let me propagate myself. Let me become many. Let me propagate myself. And so that initial desire of the Supreme Person then gave rise to all the multiplicity, all the multiple forms that we find in this world. That initial desire. Let me become many. Let me propagate myself. So that's sort of the first reason for explaining the Lord's presence in every aspect of the creation, from start to finish. The beginning elements, the middle, the end. If you think about it, at every stage, the Lord is present. When the first elements are produced, when the universal egg actually comes to place, when the individual beings are created, the Lord takes a particular form, either as Mahavishnu or Garbhodakshaya Vishnu or Kshirodakshaya Vishnu, to enter that creation and give it life, to animate it. Because otherwise, it's just going to sit there. It's going to be dead. Right? It's inert. And something which is inert cannot produce anything else. So Prabhupada's famous line, life comes from life. Now, okay, so God is the cause of all of creation. That's accepted here. But how is he the cause? What kind of cause is he? This is another big question that's addressed here in this verse. In other words, we understand that there must be some kind of intelligence behind creation. Suppose we accept that. But then how does that intelligence create everything we see? How does he serve as the cause? So, again, the scriptures describe different kinds of causes that may exist, that can produce something. And the classic example that's given about this is the example of a pot, a clay pot. Right? Suppose you imagine you have a clay pot, the type that potters make, right? So you have a clay pot. And if I were to ask you the question, what is the cause of that pot? How might you answer that question? Give me one cause that you could say, this is the cause of the pot. One thing. The potter, right? The potter, the pot maker. What else? The earth, the clay, right? That from which it's made is the cause. Right? If the potter wasn't there, there'd be no pot because the clay would just stay clay. But if we had a potter and no clay, then also there would be no pot, right? Because what would a potter do without clay? You can't make a pot out of thin air. So clay is a cause. What else would be a cause? Yes. Okay. Who? Huh? Yes, the potter's wheel. Right? That's the instrument, right, that's used. Because clay and a potter, he can't make the pot with his hands. Right? It doesn't work. So you need a potter's wheel. What else might be the cause? Huh? Uh-huh. The oven, okay. Another tool that's used along with it. Good. Whose desire? The potter's desire, yes. Huh? The customer, right? The customer. It's important. Why would a potter ever make a pot if there was no customer? Right? If no one ever needed a pot. The person who's the end consumer of the product is going to be a cause for it as well. So all of these causes are come together in order to make the pot. The potter is called the efficient cause. Right? In this verse we read, it says Krishna is the efficient cause of creation. So the potter, the one who does it, or the painter in a painting, that's the efficient cause. The clay, That's the material cause. The material cause. The wheel, which or the oven, the instrumental cause, right? The instrument that's being used. And then the purpose to sell to the consumer is sometimes called the final cause, right? What it's ultimately meant for. Now, the material cause, the efficient cause, the instrumental cause, the point that's made in the scriptures over and over again, and is made here also in these verses, is that Krishna is all of these. He is the efficient cause, the material cause, and the instrumental cause as well. In some sense, also the final cause. The cause for the thing, the person for whom it's being made. Okay? Although we can discuss that more. But the efficient cause we understand, right? That's obvious. God is the efficient cause means God is the potter, he's the painter, or he's the clockmaker, or however we think of him. The Lord puts this whole world together. That everyone basically understands. When we talk about God as creator, we mean he's the efficient cause. But what's equally significant here is that the Lord is being described also as the material cause. What does that mean? That the stuff and substance of this creation, everything we see around us, is also Krishna. It's made from Krishna. Or, as we would say, it's Krishna's energy. But the point is, there's nothing else outside of Krishna that Krishna might use to create this material world. Even the Rig Veda talks about this. In the Purusha Sukta, Om Sahasra Shirsha Purusha Sahasraksha Sahasrapat. In the beginning, there was the thousand-headed Lord, right? 1,000 arms and 1,000 feet. And then all of creation came from him. It says, from his own limbs, used in sacrifice, the whole world was created. Why from his own body? Because there is nothing else. Right? It says in the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, it says, Lord Vishnu tells Brahma, Aham evasam evagre. In the beginning, only I existed. Now, only I exist. And yo vashishyeta sosmyaham. In the future, what will be remaining at the end of it all is me. So, when there is nothing else but Krishna, then Krishna has to be the material cause also. He has to be the stuff of creation. There's nothing else that he could possibly use to create. If there is something else, well, that would be his own creation. Right? It would be coming from him. So ultimately, it has to boil down to him. And then the instrumental cause. What is the instrument that Krishna uses to create this world? Yes, Brahma, but more fundamentally, even before Brahma shows up on the scene. No, Balaram is not the instrument. Balaram is also the efficient cause, right? Yes? Also the efficient cause. Prakriti, Maya, Shakti, right? This is the instrument that the Lord uses to create this world. One of the most important components of Prakriti, one of the first components of this Maya Shakti, is time. And time is like the ladle. It's the spoon that you use to stir the pot with. Okay? So you have in the beginning, you've got everything piled into one pot. Right? That's the substance, that's the material cause. Krishna's the pot, he's the subji inside the pot, and he's the cook also. Right? The cook is the efficient cause. The subji inside is the material cause. And then the spoon he uses to stir, and the pot and the fire. Right? This is also Krishna. It's the instrumental cause. It's Maya Shakti that he uses to get everything going. Right? Time, it agitates everything in the pot so that everything's at rest in equilibrium, and then it starts to separate. You get intelligence and mind and ego and the senses and all these different things come up, right? One after another, they all arise. Like when you're making a chaunce in the pot and you put the ghee and you put the spices at the bottom, when the spices start separating from the ghee, you can notice a difference. Then you know, okay, the spices are getting ready. They're getting ready at that point. So like that, over time, everything starts to differentiate. It starts to separate. From ahankara comes buddhi or intelligence, then from that comes mind, and from mind come the various senses and the various elements, from subtle to gross, and we have the whole system of Sankhya philosophy. So at every stage of the creation, every aspect of creation, the person doing it, the stuff being created, the instruments being used to create, every aspect of creation is Krishna. Krishna is the person behind it. He is the one manipulating it all. He's the substance of it all. But the most important ingredient for creation, the most important ingredient is what? What have we been hearing in these verses? Anyone remember? Yes. Yes. In Krishna's case, his supreme will. It says ichai, which means desire or will. God's will is the most important creation, impetus, ingredient for creation. That's the first thing that has to be there, is the Lord's desire, his ichha. Without that, nothing even moves. Nothing happens. Everything stays the way it is, the Lord's desire. Now, these verses are glorifying the Lord's desire. They're describing just how powerful is the desire of this of the Lord, his ichha. That ultimately, it says, Krishna's desire is the supreme. He makes the desire. Then all the chaturvyuhas, all the different manifestations, they add various ingredients. To help the manifestation of that desire come true, you need knowledge. So Vasudeva is in charge of knowledge. In order for it to be manifest, you need action, you need power. So Kriya Shakti is there. And who was in charge of that? Shankarsana, Balaram was in charge. So to allow that will to manifest, so many different manifestations, so many different forms of Krishna play a role. But that original desire, the whole thing is propelled by Krishna. Therefore it says, Ekala Ishara Krishna Arsha Bhritya. There's one master, one Lord Krishna. Everyone else is dependent on him. Everyone else is servant. Because that desire, that original desire, comes from him. The Upanishads say, Tadaikshata, he thought, Bahusyam, let me become many, Prajayaya, let me propagate myself. And it's that desire which makes Krishna who he is. The Lord is called Satya Sankalpa. This is one of his names, is that he's Satya Sankalpa, which means he whose Sankalpa, the word Sankalpa means determination or desire, is Satya, or reality. He's also called Apta Kama, which means, Kama means desire, Apta means one who already has or gained whatever he desires. So both mean the same thing. Satya Sankalpa, the Lord's desire, his the Lord's intention is reality. Is reality. That's a very powerful statement. Because if you think about it, our whole existence in this world, our whole struggle in this world, happens because there's such a big gap between our determination and reality. So I'm determined that I'm going to get a degree at Bhaktivedanta College. So that's not reality, right? It takes 3 years at least to make it reality. I'm determined that I have a desire. I want to eat. I'm hungry. That desire doesn't fill my belly, nor does it manifest food. And then I have to make an effort. I have to cook, or I have to go down to the tent and get some prasad. So there's a big gap, sometimes a huge gap, between what we desire, what our intent is, and what actually is the case. And then we have to work in order to make it reality. What sets Krishna apart from the rest of us is that when he desires something, it's reality. His intention is actually the stuff of this creation. It's the will of the Lord. And so, Lord Mahavishnu, he creates this whole cosmic manifestation, this whole material cosmos. And how does he do it? By sleeping. Means all he needs to do is have the intent, And all the universes come pouring out of his breath and his the pores of his body. That's all. What a way to create this universe. Right? Yoga Nidra, through sleep. He dreams this whole creation. It's like a pleasant dream, you know? Like the way our dreams are effortless, we don't have to work hard to create things in our dreams. It just comes. For the Lord, this whole creation is effortless. His sankalpa, his intent, I'm going to do this, is satyam. It's truth. It's reality. It's the way it is. You don't find him actually working to make it reality in the way that Brahma does. Arranging things, manipulating things, creating things. Oops, this went wrong. Let's make this. Let's fix this out. He doesn't have to do that. No assembly lines, nothing. Just satya sankalpa. Or in terms of Leela, right? You think of Krishna when the residents of Vrindavan, they wanted to go to visit the Ganges, to Ganga on pilgrimage. Because everyone likes to go to the Ganga. And they had the Yamuna, of course, but they wanted to go on pilgrimage to the Ganga. So they decided, let's go. And Krishna, he didn't want that. He said, no, who wants to leave Vrindavan? Right? Of course, Krishna leaves Vrindavan very soon, after 12. But he doesn't want his family members to go anywhere. Right? So he says, okay. He says, you don't go anywhere. He says, I will bring the Ganga here. And from his mind, right, he has a desire, his intent. And satya sankalpa. It's there, it's reality. And that place you can still visit. It's called Manasi Ganga. It's the Ganges, created by Krishna's mind, manasa, right, by his intent. He says, it'll happen, it is there. In the same way, you can go to Vrindavan and visit, or to Brajamandal, you can visit Badrinath, Kedarnath, Jagannath Puri, you can visit all of the holy places, all manifested there by Krishna's intent, his desire. All the holy rivers show up in Shyamakunda. Why? Satya Sankalpa. Krishna says, I want them here, they're here. That's all he has to do. He doesn't have to lift a finger even in order to make things happen. It's this idea of the Lord's will which is very, very important for us to understand Krishna in every part of this creation. Because it's also what sets us apart from the impersonalists and other kinds of impersonalist philosophies, right? Is this idea of the will, that the Lord has will. The impersonalists, they cannot accept this idea. That the Lord has will, because it makes the Lord a person. The moment you have a will, then it means you have someone who possesses that will, who's expressing that will, that desire. And desire is anathema. It's disgusting to the impersonalist. Oh, desire. Why would God have desire? They can't handle that point. And so no ichha is not possible. No desire is possible in the Supreme Lord. And so they're very, very stuck in terms of describing creation. Because how can you have creation without someone's desire? A child doesn't come without someone's desire. A building is not built by someone's desire, without someone's desire. Food is not cooked without someone's desire. So how can you explain creation without the desire of someone? And therefore they say that this creation is an illusion. Right? It does not exist. It's not reality. In fact, it's just caused by confusion. This is the idea. It's just caused by confusion. We think that there is something here, when in fact there's nothing. Just yesterday in our Jiva Goswami course, we were talking about this famous example that the Mayavadis are so fond of giving. And that's the example of the rope and the snake. You've heard this before? Right? A man walks out in the middle of the night from his home. And as he's heading out on the path, he sees a snake, right? All coiled up, looking very menacing. And so he screams, like every good man should, and runs back into the house. Right? Next morning he comes out and he says, oh, I was so foolish. It's not actually a snake at all. It's just a rope. I left there accidentally yesterday. So, according to the Mayavadis, this world is like the snake. It's not actually there. It's just a result of our confusion. We think it's there, but it's not really there. So, when the scriptures say that the world was created by the Lord, they can't accept that. They genuinely cannot accept that. They say, no, it wasn't created. It's just a confusion. It's an illusion. It's an appearance. It's like a mirage. That's all. But there's no actual substance there. No substance. That view is rejected here. That view is rejected. No, icha, desire, is the first step of creation. And it's the Lord's desire that's important here. And that desire is reality. Then you have knowledge, then you have action, you have so many things. But desire is the very seed of creation. So this description of creation, it tells us two very important things. Number one, that you have to have consciousness behind matter for creation to take place. That's the first point. That even the Mayavadis will accept. Okay? But the second point, which they don't accept, is that that consciousness begins with desire, begins with will, begins with intent. It's Krishna's desire, but that doesn't matter. Desire has to be there. Otherwise, creation can't take place. So from a devotee's perspective, it creates such a wonderful vision of this universe that every aspect of this creation, we can see that it's there because of the desire of the Lord. In practical terms, that's a very nice way of looking at this world. Everything is there because Krishna wants it there. Right? It's his desire. It's present here. Everything is a manifestation of his will. And so nothing is disconnected from the Lord. He's present in every aspect of creation. And yet, he still maintains his identity, different from it all. So in the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna, early on, he says, I exist in everything. And everything exists in me. Right? He has this famous statement. He says, I am present in everything. Maya tatam idam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina. Matsthani. I am in everything, but everything is also in me. Which is, of course, a contradictory statement. Because both things in the material world are not possible. If I'm sitting in this room, for example, then clearly the room cannot be inside me. It's one or the other. The child is in the mother's womb. The mother cannot be in the child. It's one or the other. You can't have two things existing within each other. That makes no sense. But Krishna says, no, I am in everything and everything is in me. That's how closely Krishna is connected to this creation. And then he shows it. Right? Chapter 9, he makes this claim. In chapter 10, the Lord shows how I am in everything. I am in everything. Raso hamapsukonte prabhasmi shashi suryu. I am the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon. I am the season of spring. I am Arjuna, you. He says so many different things. I am the shark. I am bodies of water. I am the ocean. He shows how he is in everything. And in chapter 11, he turns around and says, shows what? Everything is in me. He shows his universal form, and there within his body, you can see all the sun and the moon are his eyes, and the wind is his breath, and fire is coming from his mouth, and the mountains are his bones, and Indra and Varuna are his arms, and the whole universe is within his body. So chapter 10 shows Krishna is in everything. Chapter 11, everything is in Krishna. What does this mean? Krishna is the cause, efficient cause, and the material cause of creation. That's how closely he is connected to everything in this world. Through his energies, he is able to exist in everything. And yet, and this is the third part of what he says in chapter 9, he says, everything is in me, I am in everything, and yet I am still separate. Nothing is in me, I am in nothing, he says. Which is yet another contradiction. He says, I still exist on my own separately. All these are my energies, and in one sense the energy is no different than the energetic. But still, the energetic maintains his own position. I'm still separate, I have my own identity. So therefore, everything is not Krishna. We cannot take tables and chairs and worship them. It's not Krishna. Because Krishna maintains his own identity. This is called achintya bheda bheda. This is what it means. Inconceivable difference and non-difference at the same time. Everything is part of Krishna. Everything is separate from Krishna. And this is contradictory. It's confusing. And therefore it's achintya. It's inconceivable. Right? Because that's the way it's supposed to be. Krishna is supposed to be inconceivable. Otherwise he wouldn't be Krishna. Right? He wouldn't be God. Whatever he'd be, he wouldn't be God. If he was all conceivable. If we could figure him out completely, he wouldn't be God. Right? We'd be God. But the fact that we cannot figure him out completely, it means he is God. Right? He's achintya, inconceivable. So this is the wonderful concept of creation that we have. Right? So deep. So many different kinds of causes, and Krishna is all of them. Through his energies, through himself personally, but Krishna is all of them. So I'll stop here. If there are questions or comments at this point, yes, Prabhu?
Well, you mentioned
What kind of cause are the living entities? Yes. Okay, so that's a very good question. If we try to bring it home and say, well, what is our role in this creation? Krishna says, how does it go? Bhumirapu nalo vayu kam mano buddhirevacha ahankara bhinna. No, how does it go? Yeah, but they're manipulating. What is it? Aparayam itas tvanyam prakritim vidhime param jiva bhuta mahabaho yayedam dharyate jagat. He's saying. So, we ourselves are also creators and manipulators, and we're also part of the substance of this creation. We have all of these things. We're also causes, right? But just in a very small way, in a very small role. So, in other words, all these attributes that we've been hearing, icha, will or desire, kriya, activity, jnana, knowledge, all of these are attributes of us as well. We are also efficient causes. We are also instrumental causes. In some cases, we're also material causes, right? Like babies are born from our own bodies. We provide the substance for their creation. So yes, because we're part and parcel of Krishna, we are all of these things in a very, very limited way, very small way. And therefore, the key for the living entities is to say, okay, here's the supreme will, right? Krishna's will. His desire through which everything is happening. Bhakti means, devotional service means, how can I plug my desire into the desire of the Lord? Right? That's what bhakti is. That my will be part of Krishna's will. And then imagine, right? Then for the devotee, nothing becomes impossible. What is impossible for that person? Because that person is now connected to the one who is Satya Sankalpa. And therefore Prabhupada says, nothing is impossible, right? Impossible is a word in the fool's dictionary. Why? For us, so many things are impossible. But when we connect our will to Krishna's will, then the access to Sankalpa, to Satya Sankalpa, is unlimited. Right? And so anything that is Krishna's desire becomes our desire, which means anything is possible, really, at that point. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has this beautiful song. You may have seen it in the songbook. It's called Tumi Sarveshvareshvara. It's from Sharanagati. And he says, Tumi Sarveshvareshvara Brajendra Kumar Tomar Ichhai Bishwe Srijana Sanghar. By your desire, everything is created and destroyed. Tava Ichhamato. The word here is Ichha, okay? Tava Ichhamato Brahma Korena Srijan. By your desire, Brahma creates. Tava Ichhamato Vishnu Karena Palan. By your desire, Vishnu preserves. Tava Ichha Mate Shiva Korena Samhar. By your desire, Shiva destroys. Tava Ichha Mate Maya Srije Karagar. By your desire, material energy creates this prison house. Tava Ichha Mate Jiver Janama Maran. By your desire, the living entity is born and dies. Samriddhi Nipata Dukha Sukha Sangatan. By your desire, all these things, success, failure, happiness, and distress come. And it goes on like this. The whole song is about this. Tava Ichha Mate, by your desire this happens, by your desire it happens, by your desire it happens. for the devotee, because they love Krishna, this is wonderful. You see Krishna in every part of creation. But for one who is not a devotee, or for even the demon, you can imagine how suffocating this must get, right? To not be able to escape the Lord in any case, in any situation. It becomes very distressing. We sing every day, Ito Narsingha Parato Narsingho, Yato Yato Yami Tato Narsingha. Narsingadev is there and he's also here. Wherever I go, Lord Narsingadev is there. For Prahlad, this is beautiful. This is wonderful. It means if he eats poison food, Lord Narsingadev is there. He's thrown off a cliff, Narsingadev is there. But for Hiranyakashipu, it's horrible. Right? Everywhere he runs, the Lord is there. So it has both sides. The Lord's all-encompassing will can be on one hand liberating, so wonderful for a devotee, for the jiva. On the other hand, for other living entities, it can be near suffocating once they realize this fact, right? And this is why they try to kill the Lord by saying he has no form, no personality, and so on, because it's too suffocating to think of the fact that there is someone there whose will is so great that it encompasses everything. Yes? Good question. There's several reasons. One is that he wants to distance himself to some level from the creation. Right? This is part of his activity, is that he material creation stays always at a distance from the Lord. So he himself doesn't have to be bothered by it. Okay? So the Lord creates multiple manifestations of himself, basically, to take care of various aspects of creation. He delegates, and he delegates to himself. Right, all these different aspects of creation. So that's one reason, to keep a distance, because Maya can never touch the Lord. Right? Material energy cannot touch the Lord. Even as Mahavishnu, all he does is just glance, that's it. Right? He doesn't have to get any closer. He reserves his closeness for the spiritual world with the internal energy. So that's one reason. The other is of course, this aspect of wonder for the living entity. But also, it's for the Lord's own lila, his own pastime. The only reason that the Lord manifests himself in so many multifarious forms, multiple forms, is for the purpose of lila, for the purpose of his sport or his pastime. Otherwise, there is no reason, because he's self-satisfied and he's all fulfilled already. And so, we were mentioning the final cause, and I didn't say too much about that, but that is the final cause. Ultimately, it's all for the pleasure of the Lord. Right? He is also the consumer of the product. He's the cook, he's the pot, he's the sabji in the pot, he's the fire, he's the spoon, and he's also the person who's eating it, ultimately. Right? He's the one who's relishing it. This Bhagavad Gita says, Brahmarpanam, Brahmahavir, Brahmagno, Brahmanahutam. How does it go? Brahmaiva tena gantavyam, Brahmakarma samadina. What's offered into the fire is Brahman, the fire itself is Brahman, the priest offering the fire is Brahman, right? The person to whom it's going, whoever's eating it, the demigods, they're also Brahman. Right? So the point is, every aspect, including the enjoyment, ultimately is Krishna. Right? He's enjoying it through his lila. There's a hand here. Yes. Right. Yes. Yes. Very nice question. The question of the mirage, because Bhagavatam also gives the story of the mirage, and the snake is kind of like that, the snake and the rope. The point is, we also accept that this material world is illusory in the sense that it doesn't live up to its promises. Right? It's not what it promises to be. We think there's water there, and we run to it, and it's actually just sand. So like that, the material world is illusory. But here's the difference. We accept the idea that although this may be a mirage, real water does exist. Right? And this is the step that the impersonalists never take. The material world is like a snake. Right? The Lord is like a rope. But it's only like a snake, the illusory snake. Real snakes don't exist, they say. We say, no, the only reason you can be confused that there's a snake here is because real snakes exist, right? Otherwise, why would you think it's a snake if real snakes didn't exist? Isn't it? So the point is, yes, the material world may be illusory, but variety, form, and substance actually do exist as soon as we connect it to Krishna. Then it's no longer a mirage. It's true. It's real. Right? The mirage comes when we disconnect it from Krishna. Then it becomes illusory. It becomes false. So that's the point, is that we accept water, real water exists, and the mirage is our problem. Mayavadis say, there's only the mirage, there's no water. We say, real snakes exist. They say, no, there's only the snake, only the illusion of a snake. No real snakes exist. That's it. There's actually many, many nice arguments against the rope and the snake example. We went through this actually yesterday in class. We don't have time to go into them, but each aspect of the analogy can be cut down one after another. Very, very, it's actually a lot of fun to do. Last question here. Yeah, that's a good question. It's because Krishna, he fulfills everyone's desire. So when we want to enjoy, Krishna gives us this material world to enjoy. When we want to enjoy our senses, for someone who doesn't want to enjoy their senses, but wants to enjoy being the Lord, right? The impersonalist, namely, Krishna also fulfills their desire by giving them a place in the Brahma Jyoti where they can emerge with the existence of the Lord. Now, the thing is that this is the greatest form of Maya. Right? It's the greatest form of confusion. And therefore, even that position in the Brahma Jyoti is not permanent. Right? Even though it's called liberation, right? That word is used, mukti. But it's actually not really mukti. Right? Vaishnavas don't really consider that to be real mukti or real liberation, even though it receives that term. Because it's not a permanent situation. Bhagavatam says, Aruhya krichena parampadam tata patantya dho nadrita yushmadangreya. Although they rise to what may seem like the highest position, they fall because they don't have the conception of serving the lotus feet of the Lord. So that's the problem. Therefore, it's still within the realm of Maya because it's temporary in one sense. Right? It's not something that they can actually stay. All the other forms of mukti are real. But this form of mukti for a devotee is actually regarded to be similar to hell. It's regarded as hellish because it's separation from the Lord. Or the Lord is not visible there. So we're out of time. I'm sorry for not being able to get to all of the questions, but we can talk individually. Thank you all for your attention. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki jai.